This is Robert Stark. We have on the show Peter Alotka, his son Greg Alotka, and Bill Eberle. They are well-known game designers and have all worked on a Cosmic Encounter. Their recent game is the Iron Throne, a Cosmic Encounter spinoff with a Game of Thrones theme. It's great having you guys all on the show.
Good to be here. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
And I'm also joined here with my co-host, Pilliter.
Hi, everyone. It's so exciting to talk to you guys. I love Cosmic Encounter. It's so nice to talk to you.
Well, glad you love it. We're ready to talk.
Could you discuss the history of Cosmic Encounter? How did you guys come up with the concept for the game, and where is it today?
It actually was born on Nauset Beach.
Where's that?
On Cape Cod. Peter and I were talking about all the things that were wrong with some of the board games we were playing. And we wanted to do a different board game. We wanted to do our own board game, and we both like science fiction. So we wanted to do a science fiction game. And Peter, the more you get to know Peter, you'll know this is quite typical. He made a list. And Peter, do you want to talk about the list?
Well, the list was sort of all the things that we wanted and didn't want in the game. So we didn't know what the game was, but we knew what kind of characteristics we wanted in the game. And so they were things like, without reading the list, things like everybody would always be in the game till the end. And this was a pushback against games like Risk, where somebody would be out of the game for hours while the last two guys rolled dice. I'm thinking, well, what kind of game is that? You know, everybody else is in the kitchen, you know, drinking coffee, or in our case, drinking wine. And, you know, so things like we wanted games where every time you played it, it would be different. Not the same old thing, time after time after time. So how could you make it different? We wanted games that were attractive in their content and style for women as well as men. Because even then, I mean, there was no gaming, there was no community. There was no gaming community.
Are you talking more about how the game works or the aesthetic design or both?
Both.
Both in a sense, but in a way that, we're talking about 1972.
Yeah, so it's pre-D&D even.
Yeah, we were saying
this is pre-D&D, it's pre-Magic, it's pre-any of these kind of games, period.
We wanted everybody to be different, too. That each person in the game would feel different from the other people. Like in Monopoly, everybody is, you know, a landlord. Well, we wanted a game in which not everybody was the same thing, or in Risk, everybody was a general, or whatever. We wanted everybody to really be different, and that every time you came and played the game again, you would all be different, and it would be different than that the last time you played it. It would be a completely different game. So those were some of our, you know, we said no hop hop.
Yeah, you know, we're gonna no dice in the game. Although we broke, and so for all the rules that we put in, we've broken them all. So the key to this, the key to it is breaking the rules.
Right.
And so when you adopt that as what you're going to be doing, it just opens up the universe. And of course, so we were reading a lot of science fiction at the time, and so we thought that, you know, if we made a science fiction, once you have your underpinnings be science fiction, there's no limit. There's no limit to what you can do. You're not constrained by anything,
right?
Except your imagination. So
kind of like the writers for Star Trek. You know, when you're not constrained by the bounds of Earth, you can pretty much make up any plot line you want. Go into the holodeck, whatever your imagination comes up with, right?
Right, all those cheesy Star Trek episodes.
Yeah.
You know? So you'd look at that, you know, and the alien of the week was, you know, this ball of fuzz, you know, floating around. So we're going,
Trouble with Tribbles.
Yeah, ball of fuzz, man, write it in.
Was the first prototype of a Cosmic Encounter supposed to be for Milton Bradley?
No.
Parker Brothers. Prototype, it was even before that.
That was way, but our first prototypes of Cosmic Encounter were for us. And it took, 5 years from when we started thinking about it to when we went to Parker Brothers? The Parker Brothers was at the 5 year juncture.
We started thinking about it in 71, and we were playing it probably at least a year. I mean, we really had something cohesive that we were playing before we went to Parker Brothers.
Oh, more. I mean, Parker Brothers' deal was 76.
76.
The deal that fell through. So it was that many years. And so for that long a time, here's what's interesting. So even though we were thinking that we were so innovative and we would break all the rules, we were so stupid that we played the same six aliens for 5 years.
So, and it was fun.
Yeah. And it was fun.
Wasn't it was it Macro and the Loser? Macro. No.
Oh, Loser was like, he was.
It was the Mind.
Yeah.
It was the amoeba, which could ooze.
The plant.
It was the plant.
Right, plant.
It was the machine.
The virus and the
virus diplomat. And the diplomat. Mm.
Those were the aliens.
And we had great fun playing it. I mean, the game would have us laughing so hard it hurt.
And here's why. The reason was you couldn't predict what would happen, because the permutations, even with six aliens, you can't predict what's going to happen. And so by doing that, ultimately it alienates a lot of gamers today, in today's world, who are really smart and can remember everything, want to play games where that's their chief asset. That's how they're going to win. They can remember more than everybody else. In this game, you're hard pressed because now there's 195 aliens. There are billions and billions and billions of combinations of aliens, and it's the combination that pops out the different game. So nobody can master every single, scintilla of information that's going to happen when you play Cosmic. That's what we like. It's like being
Bill made a formula, I think, didn't he? Didn't you, Bill, make a formula to catch all the different possible combinations as you added more aliens?
Oh no, yeah, there's a formula. That's a pretty standard,
yeah,
combinations formula. I forgot what I was going to say.
Well, it's funny. We were just talking about this today, oddly enough, about how the you guys were saying you gave credit to the fans for coming up with the idea of other aliens, and they said, "Wait a minute, there have to be more than six aliens after the first one was released."
People wanted us to do more.
Well, the actual release had 15 aliens in it. So yeah. When the one that we finally did ourselves as Eon Products after Parker Brothers gave the one we took up there the boot. So we then created. Oh, he said, "Oh, well, we'll make our own game." So we made our own company, and we made 15 aliens. We thought, "Wow, this is it. We're done."
And we took it to science fiction conventions,
right?
And people loved it. So then we figured out how to get enough money. We got a new partner who helped with that, and we published it. But very quickly, people were saying, "We want more aliens."
And we go, what do you mean? Okay. There aren't any more. That's what we said.
We'll do expansion sets. We got into it pretty quickly. All we had to do is do one or two, and we said, "Oh, this is easy. We can do more."
Who designed the illustrations for the cards?
For the original game?
Yes.
We had a number of artists. We had Linda Baum. Was she doing art for us? We had Dean Morrissey.
But the original sketches were done by one of our partners at the time, a guy by the name of Bill Norton, who abandoned the company along the way before it became, really published. Norton we basically bought him out. He didn't want to do it, but he sketched a lot of the early stuff. And then Laurie Walls,
that's
the art for the first set. I don't know where she is today. And Dean Morrissey still kicks around somewhere. Linda Bound died a few years ago from cancer. So she was one of the artists on the expansion sets. But most of the stuff, you know, we at that time, we would just say, we think it looks like this. And everybody but Dean would follow our instructions. And Dean would draw whatever he thought of that morning.
You know, Dean actually, speaking
he
of Game
signed
of
all
Thrones,
the aliens.
It was a giant gothic lettering.
Right. You'd look at Dean's thing, it's because Dean Morrissey is scrawled across.
And it's sort of funny. It's sort of a full circle thing. He has more of a Game of Thrones look than any of them. I mean, his stuff could have really fit in that world.
That's right, Dean.
One of the kind of gestalt things about Cosmic Encounter that was in our minds is that if we ever do encounter life from other planets and other galaxies or whatever, it's not going to be what we expect.
Yeah, the odds are it's not going to be.
The odds are that human beings are going to have to kind of encounter brand new situations and think fast and figure out, well, what do I do now? And so we really wanted Cosmic Encounter to be like that.
Mm-hmm.
You're out on your own, and you've got some abilities, and other people have abilities, and figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
And because you've never played this game before, because it's a different set of aliens, you know, think. And
you guys probably know that as if you're longtime fans of the game. I mean, every time you take the box out, you've got a pretty good chance of getting a very different game than you've ever played, no matter how many hundreds of times you've sat down at the table. It's just going to surprise you. And that may be one of the things that it's sort of a polarizing game. You go on Board Game Geek, it tends to have people who are, you know, huge fanatics, and other people who just, they're just like, it's the worst
I
one.
Know, right?
My carefully laid strategy fell apart after 5 minutes. It's not fair.
I've like, been playing this game since I was like 16, 17 years old, and I've been playing it every Wednesday night until I was like, I still do. I think my name online was Greg Warpish. I was so obsessed with Cosmic Encounter.
Yeah. Oh, did you play online? Did you play Cosmic Online? Oh.
Yes, I did. Yes, my name was Greg Warpish.
I remember you. So Greg was our guy on Cosmic Online, sort of honcho that whole thing. And Bill wrote some of the AI for the aliens, for the bots. We love that little thing. It just died of its own accord. Well, sorry that it's
gone. Now that there's Cosmic Encounter Connector on Steam, that's a whole new universe.
It is.
Yeah, it's better because what people want is everything. Mm-hmm. And so there you've got everything. We couldn't give you everything in Cosmic Encounter Online.
Cosmic Encounter was influenced by a lot of the original science fiction writers from the 60s and 70s. Do you have any particular writers that inspired you?
I think the biggest thing you would say is we another game we did was Dune.
Yes.
And we all were fans of Frank Herbert's Dune. I think we all read voraciously through a lot of science fiction, and it was the fantasy of humans encountering other life forms. That it was just that kind of that large fantasy.
I remember a lot of Isaac Asimov being on your shelves, Dad, and Ellison, right?
Harlan Ellison, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Ellison.
I think Harlan Ellison actually said that your game was mind-boggling.
Mind-boggling.
I remember.
So I saw Harlan Ellison at a science fiction con in Phoenix, because we were, at the time, we were going around to the various science fiction. I think it was the Worldcon. Must have been a Worldcon in Phoenix. And he was up there signing stuff, and I go up, and I gave him a game. You know, he was up there autographing books. So I say, you know, here, take this. So he takes it, and that's it. And he wrote that back to me. And I say, can I put that on the box? He goes, yeah, sure. I don't care. So that was neat. And, you know, if you think about it, I think this is what's really happening. What's really happening is that all of these aliens that we have in here, you'd probably find them one by one over time. This game is coming from somewhere else. And, you know, it's funny because when people think of aliens, it's sort of this archetypal, you know, movie-driven, comic book-driven alien. And we've always, you know, and we're always battling, we always battle artists about what these things should look like. Because generally, when we've run into, you know, people trying to draw the stuff, they want to make it, A, they want to give them all guns. And B, they all want to make them look, you know, like Hasbro is it's the great example of the worst art. When we did the game, when Hasbro published it in 2000, the guy who did the art made it look like the alien in the movie Alien. And then he copied that same alien and changed the hue of it. And about half the aliens in the game look like the alien in the movie Alien.
Did you have
the diplomat looks like the, you know, they all look like the alien in the movie.
They were all evil and boring.
Right.
I liked that.
Did you have any kind of particular like image of what the alien should look like and inspiration when you commissioned the designs?
Yeah, usually we said, for instance, the empath. We said, make it a world. Make it a, not an alien, but make it a whole world.
A place.
And so the first illustration of it was, you know, this world with a rainbow and the sun and sort of green like and nice Peter water.
It's a place. It's a, you know, look at those old Star Trek episodes, you know, they had every, you know, the alien could be the planet, or, you know, it could be a trifle or a truffle or whatever the hell it is.
So we usually said what we wanted. We didn't always get it. We're actually, with Fantasy Flight, we really feel like we're getting some decent art.
That's terrific.
Particularly, we love the art of what's
Alicia
her name?
Alicia Cano.
We love her art.
Yes.
It's just fantastic. Mm-hmm. The latest expansion set, Eons, she did them all. She's just fantastic. And they're different.
And they're detailed.
And they're detailed and they're humorous. You know, we love it.
I think without our intervention, all the aliens would have a gun. I'm serious. You know, and if we make aliens that aren't all shooters. You know, it's one of the things about this game is that we're trying to, here's the audience. Let's hear, you know, I'm trying to, we try to tell people about the audience for Cosmic, and here's what we've learned. People who like Cosmic Encounter are smart, and they have a sense of humor, and they don't take themselves too seriously. So when you have those three things, you love this game.
Right.
And winning, but if you're a gamer who thinks that, you know, you're better than everybody and can't stand it when something goes wrong, you're not going to like this game very much. You know, because it's not designed for you to, you know, act in a way that will dominate everything. It's designed for you to be able to figure out what to do when you find yourself in this strange situation with all these things happening around you and to you and because of you. You know, and so how do I deal? You know, do I have to make a deal with that Everly guy? Are you kidding me?
Have you ever thought,
is he going to stab me in the back?
The best games are the ones that where you're continually surprised, and it doesn't matter if you win. Yeah. If you really went, wow, that was, and people say that was Cosmic.
Have you guys ever thought of making a cardless version of Cosmic where it'd be more dice and social interaction, where you could get rid of like the encounter cards? I mean, but instead, like, it's all through words or dice rolling as if it was a role playing game.
No.
You know, if you did something, I mean, I think there probably are games like that now. We don't play a lot of other people's games, A, because we're probably doing more work now than we have in maybe, I don't know if forever, but for a long time.
30 years.
Yeah, I mean, it's been quite a while since we did this much work. But we're doing, work on
these games.
We have a whole bunch of stuff that we can't talk about that's in progress. And, you know, it all came from having the fans design Cosmic Dominion. So, you know, that expansion set, was the fifth expansion set. was designed by the fans.
Yeah, I think I was a part of it too. I think
were
I
you
might
in
have,
there?
I think so, but I don't want to give details. But I think it had something to do with probably the bride or along
the
that
bride. Way. Oh, the bride. The bride is so. My granddaughter Lila, who's now, she'll be 9 at her next birthday. When she was 5 or 6, she called me one morning and said, "Grandpa, I have an idea for an alien." She was playing Cosmic Fighter. She goes, "It's called the gown, and it marries other aliens." The reason she did that is because Greg, her uncle, was getting married, and Lila was a flower girl to be in the wedding. So she decided, and I'm going, "Lila, an alien bride. That is one of the best ideas I've ever heard." And that's where it came from.
I was all for that, too. I think I was doing the same thing, too. I was like, well, will you marry aliens together? And now you have both the abilities. You know?
That's right. But so I have pictures of Lila and Tess, her sister, playing here at our house. And it turns out that Lila was playing the bride. And she was taking half of Tess's cards in alimony. Their mother, Greg's sister, my daughter, Kristen, was horrified. What do you mean you're getting alimony? But that's a great alien. It's one of the funnier aliens. And there was, I don't know if you guys have ever seen it, but what's the British group? Shut Up and Sit Down or Sit Down and Shut Up?
Sit Up and Shut Down.
Those guys. Okay. The funniest video of one of their of their players and playing the bride. Oh my gosh, you can't watch without holding your sides.
We have a funny
first
set
official
of
contribution. Greg's
in Games Magazine.
Oh right, that one.
Oh, yeah, there was an article from Games Magazine, and they basically had a set of pictures that had us going from being ordinary human beings to aliens.
If they had had Photoshop, they would have used it, but it was before it was invented.
It was pretty cheesy.
They probably teleported it back there. So Greg's first official contribution was the history of the Warpish. I think he was.
Yeah.
Your latest project is based on a Game of Thrones. How did you decide that a Game of Thrones and Cosmic Encounter was a good thing to add together? And is this officially for Game of Thrones?
Well, our publisher, Fantasy Flight, called us and said, "Hey guys, what do you think of using Cosmic Encounter's underpinnings and game system for an HBO Game of Thrones license?" And we said, "Oh, I don't know. You know, who'd want an old thing like that, you know, that nobody's ever heard of, except the 27 million people who watch it every Friday, which is probably more people by
I think
fact
was
than
on
a thousand that have ever heard of Cosmic Encounter."
That was on a Thursday or a Friday, and by the Monday, we had created a database, and then I already had a database of all the aliens, so I added all the I basically researched, added all the Game of Thrones families and the different characters, and cross-checked them and had a spreadsheet laying out how they could do, I don't know, like a game with a billion expansion sets for all. But and they went, "Whoa, slow down, guys."
Yeah, it was think about that. That game went from a concept in everybody's heads at Fantasy Flight and a Future Pastimes to a product for sale on the shelves in the box, like in just over a year, right?
Yeah, start to
something like that. And the ribs are ready for Christmas.
And we were playtesting in the late
simulator.
Winter.
Yeah, we had it up on the simulator in our private playtest.
They would send us the latest art resources. We would convert them and playtest in simulator.
Yeah, so rapid prototyping, because we're all in different places. I'm in Atlanta. You know, my dad's up in Cape Cod. Bill's in Maine. And, you know, we do 99% of our work is just done. You know, we log into Skype, call each other up, jump into TTS, and use Google Docs. You know, it's the thing is, just a few years ago, we couldn't have really put together an organization like this because the technology wasn't there. It's staggering how much things have changed in just the past 2 years, how much more advanced things have become for collaboration?
As far as how the new version of Game of Thrones works, how is it different than the original version? Is it a lot more competitive?
You mean different from their Game of Thrones games or from Cosmic?
From what Cosmic.
From the original Cosmic. How is the version of Cosmic?
Oh, it's very different.
Yeah, I think it's very different. It's not.
So there's no. It's not like a Aliens and Game of Thrones. It's purely Game of Thrones without the aliens.
Yeah, this is based really. If you think about it, it's Game of Thrones is a world where treachery is, you know, coin of the realm.
Yeah, it's not a lot of chuckles at Game of Thrones. You know?
I was actually a little worried about the idea of taking a game.
The original version is everyone stays in the game till the end, and Game of Thrones, everyone's constantly getting killed off.
Well, everyone, I mean, players get killed off. I mean, characters get killed off, but players usually stagger into the finish line one way or the other.
Right.
So you're playing they get a new character?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
some of your characters that you're depending on in your family.
Yes,
killed, but you still, as the leader, you're still alive and playing. And you can win with several of your characters having died.
Yeah. So it's we were talking about players in particular being eliminated from the game. And in Game of Thrones, you're in there and you're playing. What's interesting about it is we took the underlying, sort of the underpinnings, which is sort of, if you look at that simple interaction that drives Cosmic, which is both players attack, both players negotiate, or one attacks and the other negotiates. That is such a simple yet, you know, far-reaching interaction. And they use that interaction in Game of Thrones because the results of that, those cards being played and the outcomes being so variable works elegantly in the Game of Thrones situation. I mean, it's a nice solid way that you can imagine these Game of Thrones characters encountering each other, you know, with something to say.
Yeah, in Fantasy Flight, they were looking for a real character-based social interaction game, not a map game, not a card game, not a trivia game. They have, you know, what, 10 other variants of that right now, but you know, they're all, I mean, I think most of them are probably fans of Cosmic or they're very familiar with it. And I think they were the ones who said, wow, I think this could really map nicely to a Game of Thrones theme. Be nice to see some new products come out like that, some new games that use the Cosmic mechanics, you know, overlaid onto other themes.
In Game of Thrones, the idea of having these characters be the centerpiece of the game. So it's not a battle of armies, you know, it's a battle of wits and individual characters, each character possessing, you know, some unique characteristics that give it a slight edge in a certain way. So that's, you know, that's basically a cosmic alien or a cosmic flare card or a cosmic artifact.
So kind of explaining how the game works to people who don't understand, like in some board games, obviously, like chess, everyone has an equal amount of players with equal power, and it's based on a skill. In some games, people start off with more players, and they're given an advantage randomly. Is everyone given like an equal playing field from the beginning of the game?
I don't think it's equal at all. I mean, equality isn't the goal. The goal is difference. And so,
but you have the same number of, you know, you start with the same amount of power.
Yes, the right. numbers are
well,
the same.
That's what I was...
The numbers are the same, but the characters are variable.
But each player becomes one family, and you select or randomly have one of the characters in that family, one of the main people in the shows, that's going to be your leader. And that's a power that you can use throughout the game all the time. And then you have all the other family members. They have a power. It's more like flares. They're a one-time use. You use them when they're
when they're appropriate, and you have to have that person in that interaction, that encounter. And it's similar to Cosmic in that you flip destiny, and they call it destiny.
It's
events.
Events.
Was it events? So yeah. There's an event, and now you know, Stark has to go and deal with the Lannisters.
Right.
And the Stark have, one of the Stark family members is the leader, and the others are, you know, they have abilities.
They're sent out to do the dirty work.
Right. Well,
dirty work, and they may, you know, get weaker and they may die, but
they can look for supporters, you know, see, you know, can I get this other house to help me out on this little foray I'm making?
That's funny because when we started, we were going to say, well, one of the original goals is, well, let's stick as closely as possible to the mechanics of Cosmic, because the more things we change, the more things will break, the more things we'll have to retest. But we all did up substantially changing the mechanics in order to make it more, just feel more Game of Thrones-ish, you know, like instead of just planets, the planets in Cosmic don't have any special characteristics. Well, we literally turn the planets into, you know, the other characters. Yeah.
Into people, right.
So it's a lot of fun. It's just a huge change for the game. It makes you think about, you know, what would happen if we went back the other way and made Cosmic more like Game of Thrones, the Iron Throne, you know? Could you have little planets out there who were, you know, your henchmen of the main leader, maybe.
Next expansion set.
Yeah.
Talking planets.
Well, I always say that Cosmic Encounter, each one of those aliens is a different game.
Yeah.
And you could create a game just by taking a Cosmic Encounter alien or two, and you've got a whole game there. Cosmic is just so full of those kind of differences and those different kind of game play. That's why people love it.
Because there's so much. The key thing for players who are going to play, Game of Thrones, is that when you play this game, it's like being in a new episode. it's an episode. So if you think of the episodes of Games of Thrones, and you play one game of Cosmic, you know, of Game of Thrones, the Iron Throne, it's like a new episode. That's dramatically different from playing the other games that are around that are Game of Thrones games, because you have a big battle, you know, it's a battle scene, or it's a trivia game, or it's a card game. No game is like making a new episode of the show. But these games, if you played one of these games and then wrote it up, you'd have a new episode. You know, all of the machinations that took place between the particular collection of characters that happened to be in that game and happened to be confronting each other in certain circumstances, you know, with certain other of the houses helping at a certain time and betraying each other or not.
Have you thought about making a smaller version of Cosmic Encounter, like a portable edition of the game?
We think about lots of things that we can't talk about.
I noticed the Game of Thrones edition is pretty small. I mean, the most smallest edition of Cosmic I have is the Mayfair edition, which fits with more Cosmic Encounter and Simply Cosmic in a single box. And I love bringing that one around and how old that game is. I love that edition. Like, it's funny, we were talking about how you're playing out an episode like it's Game of Thrones and you're just living through the theme. It gets me that same vibe, too, that when you play Cosmic Encounter, you're writing your own science fiction story, and hence, I remember seeing ads of Cosmic Encounter through the classic Asimov science fiction magazines, and it appeals to that science fiction creative writing aspect, as if its Cosmic Encounter can be a tool for creative writing. Or is, like, Cosmic Encounter rather a strange avant-garde art piece?
Both.
Okay.
You know, we did a game. We did Isaac Asimov's Robots.
Ugh.
We did that game, and it was – this is a – talk about a dead end of game.
Technology.
You know how when you look at, you know, archaeological or whatever it is, charts, and there's these dead end of dinosaurs. They just end. And they don't go anywhere. Well, that game was a VCR game. So talk about a dead end.
Evolutionary dead end. I think that's
right. An evolutionary dead end. Yeah. And Isaac Asimov's Robots VCR mystery game published by Kodak. and Jack Kittredge was in on that. Jack, and we wrote the script. He had to write a script. It was like a little movie. And, you know, we got to meet Isaac Asimov, who came to the little big, I said, oh, we're going to make it big. It probably sold 10 copies, you know. So we got Asimov, we have Kodak. I still have the poster on my wall.
You're probably going, well, let's see, there's an installed base of 32 million VCRs in the country.
Yeah.
We just sell 1% of, you know.
That's right.
It's old business. The old business plan. If you go on Shark Tank, they cut you off at the knees and say, "Get out of here."
I think like Shark Tank would have eaten this one.
Yeah,
you know. And so like I don't know how many months later that whole business was over. But in the interim, we did a VCR game for Ellery Queen mystery and an Agatha Christie mystery, and they were variable. They had cards that came with the VCR, and you look through some kind of a red green, you know, filter to see the right answer. Oh my God, save us.
Have you guys had the chance to check out Andy Looney's recently released Pyramid Arcade that's released by Looney Labs? It's a box full of these ice house pyramids, and it's pretty much a sandbox game where you make up the components and supposedly just a bunch of 22 games in one. We recently had him on the show, and he thinks it's his magnus opus, and it kind of reminds me of Cosmic Encounter in a strange way. I love
it. I've heard of him. I've heard of Looney Labs, but I haven't played it though.
I think I met Andrew maybe a gazillion years ago at some convention. They've been around for a bit.
Yeah, Pyramid Arcade is just, it's out there.
I have to check it out. No,
yeah,
cool.
I have to check it out.
And it just reminds me that we were talking about hippie culture and board games and how he's really influenced from this very artistic style from, you know, Peter Max and artsy things from that era, from Cosmic Wimp Out and whatnot. And Cosmic Encounter, it reminds me, how much of that hippie culture is within the game compared to the science fiction? Do you think Cosmic Encounter itself is kind of this weird esoteric hippie religion or culture or more of an art piece than a game itself?
It has a lot of that in it, I think, because of the time.
We were the generation where our parents came, you know, were kind of destroyed in some ways by the Second World War. I mean, we grew up as with people who were just kind of screwed up in some many ways because of that Second World War. They lost brothers, they lost sisters, they lost friends, and they were screwy, and we didn't trust anybody. So we were that generation that we were going to reinvent the world because we didn't like what we saw. It was nuts.
Yeah, I think there's a much bigger generation gap between, like, you know, your dad, your and Bill's parents, and then, you know, me and, you know, you. You know, that's just, in a way, you know, your Bill, like, your generation, you rejected all of their, you know, their culture. And my generation, I'm almost 49 in March. So, you know, I grew up, you know, we're born in 68, grew up in the 70s. And, you know, we've come into this sort of thing in culture, just talking more broadly about that, where everything comes around again. You know, we all, you know, 10 years later, 20 years later, it's like, ooh, the 60s are cool again. You know, I kind of went through that. It's like, hey, reliving a summer
love. Would you say that each decade is reflected uniquely in each in series of Cosmic Encounters from, like, the 70s to the 80s to the 90s to the present?
That's a really good question.
That's a great question.
I think you'll find,
I don't know,
if you look at those aliens, that many of them are spoofs on something.
I have every edition, so I can look at each copy. I have copies from Games Workshop to today. I'm the Cosmic Counter collector. I got it, guys.
So they're spoofs. Every alien is a kind of a joke, a tongue-in-cheek spoof.
Yeah, but I've never thought about them as being products of their era. That's a really interesting, because I like to think about things like that. I like to think about the, you know, things in terms of decades and blocks of time. But I've never associated that when I think of Cosmic. I don't know. I have to go back and look.
Robert, what's going on in the world affected us, and kind of those aliens ended up taking some of those ideas for our reaction to all of that, which was fairly revolutionary in terms of what we thought. Because we were saying, let's get past all of this nonsense and get out into space and start doing, you know, exploring the galaxy. exploring the, you know, our solar system, exploring beyond our solar system. That's where our heads were at. I guess so this was our way to have that fantasy.
We're thinking of is, you know, when you have these, when you have an unlimited canvas to have interactions with, you know, you can make up anything you want. And so there's no reason to be constrained by any convention whatsoever. And I think that may rub some gamers the wrong way. But remember, when we did this, there weren't any gamers. Nobody was a gamer when we started this thing. I mean, a what? A gamer was some guy who, you know, played baseball hard.
There were no real games where everybody was different every time they played it. You know,
board games have had a popular revival. Was there an era when there was a decline in interest in board games?
Oh, yeah, the 90s.
Sure. Consoles, when consoles started getting big, I'd say.
Yeah, board games took a hit.
I was so disgusted with the, you know, these games where everybody went out and shot each other. I didn't want to have anything to do with game design. I was embarrassed.
Oh, you're talking about video games?
Yeah.
Like the game Doom?
Yeah.
Sure. All
that, it just was embarrassing to me that human beings were doing that.
Now there's Doom the board game.
Of course. But I mean, when you think about it, with the, you know, the unremittent violence of the idea that you're playing a game and the what you're doing in that game is committing mayhem. And if you're the best mayhem committer, you win. I mean, there's something potentially very disturbing about that. On the other hand, I was looking at some history, you know, some History Channel redo of early kind of Aboriginal cultures where the men were, you know, and they were depicting it obviously from archaeological studies, but the men were gathered around playing these very brutal games, you know, like with a mule's head or whatever. I'm just, maybe it's just inherent in human beings that there's this need to, you know, use energy to compete in ways that, you know, build up your status. Who knows? It must have been, why people play games? You know,
we were 3-4 guys who were very competitive with each other. We really loved competing. And Cosmic Encounter gave us, you know, we invented something where we could have a lot of fun competing with each other. And we all tried to win. And we wanted it to be fair. And so we kept making adjustments so it was fair. But then we had a basic architecture, which was that you had 8 cards. You started with 8 cards. They were different cards. You might not have good cards.
It was 7, Bill.
There's 7 back then.
7 back then.
Fantasy Flight changed it to 8.
And, you know, and you all had the same goal. But then you had these aliens that were mismatched. Oh, no, I've got to deal with the antimatter. And so I don't necessarily feel like I'm as strong or have as good a power as the antimatter. I've got to be clever. And going out into the universe, or actually going out into real life, you've got to do the best you can with what you got. And so that's the idea.
And the way it blends the Game of Thrones, if you look at Game of Thrones and you look at the storylines there and, you know, George R. R. Martin's, you know, writing and converting that all into the series, and you look at all these characters, they have a lot of characters who have, you know, a multi-layered existence. They're not shallow. They have a bunch of stuff that they do, and they surprise you, and they do, you know, they have characteristics that enable them to, you know, play their role in the story. And so if you think about, you know, taking our game system and patching it, what we're basically saying is you can take these people, these story characters, and give them, I mean, there's no, we started out, as Bill was saying, you know, well, can we translate directly and save a lot of time? That really wasn't how we did it in the end. In the end, we looked at the characters and said, what's this person all about? Okay, how does that manifest itself in an interactive situation where he's going to be or she's going to be, you know, coming together with others and opposing others? you know, what does she do now? And how does that, you know, so how do you put that, you know, how do you encode that for the game? And it, but once you start down that path, it's not all that, you know, all that tricky. You just say, okay, this person is like that. This is what she did in the series. She has these kind of, you know, traits. Okay, what do we call it? We call it this, and what can she do? She does that. Okay, bing, done. Who's next?
And we did a lot of fine tuning. It was like, oh, Melisandre, that's not a good kid. That's not a good ability at all. Wait a minute, how did that get through?
Yeah, she's really powerful. How come she has a you know, a down dog power?
Right. You know, one of the most admirable things, one of the hardest things to do is look how light the text is on any of the character cards in Game of Thrones compared to your average cosmic alien, which you know, can get a little long-winded. And you know, really, we all worked on that. Fantasy Flight did they particularly focused on that. That was like one of the Justin, right? Justin.
Yeah. He's on baby watch tonight. His wife is due today.
No, that's right. He was going to be on.
Great.
That's why he wasn't on. Yeah. So, yeah. But we, you know, he's the characters. You know, if you think about it, and look at the, you know, the four or five lines that they have as their power, it's fine. You don't need all of the excesses of a cosmic alien, which is, you know, competing with 194 other aliens to have something to say. You know, for one thing, there's less. And for another thing, the writing on the character cards in Game of Thrones is, for lack of a better term, more relaxed than cosmic. It's not trying to pinpoint, you know, lots of sneaky finesse fine points.
Edge cases. Edge cases.
But the design, when we were designing Game of Thrones, it was interesting the way it developed, because Justin had his guys going over there. They had a group playing and doing stuff, and we were sort of on a parallel track. And every so often, we'd come together and say, what do you got? And we'd move stuff back. Well, we really like it to go this way. It was an interesting collaboration. It was fun. Mm-hmm. And we did it really fast. But we'd look and say, wow, they did this. That's really cool. We'd fix something and they'd say, hey, you guys got that? Okay, cool. That works.
And we really like the concept, universal power, instead of, you know, having different colored ships. Well, they turned that into the universal power in the form of those little crowns. That was a nice touch. I mean, that suddenly opens up a whole new, you know, range of options that you can do in there.
And there's no cone.
Yeah, that's right. Just turn your little planet, your character disc, sword out or shield out.
That was a great advancement. I mean, just a lot of things that happened, you know, with the game. So they had been thinking about this for a while. I mean, Fantasy Flight had the HBO. I was just reading about how Chris Peterson kind of got into all of these great licenses that he was able to put together just before, you know, things became big hits. And they have these the Game of Thrones license is terrific. I mean, it's terrific that they got it and that they thought of Cosmic as something that might be able to help them get to a good game fast.
Wouldn't I not Star Wars Cosmic Encounter?
The first Star Wars, I think, came out around the same time as Cosmic Encounter.
Oh, tell them that story. Tell the Parker Brothers story.
We were at Parker Brothers, and we did actually make a deal. We have this game. It's called Encounter, the Interstellar Science Fiction Game by Parker Brothers. In a box, prototype. And that's the only one that exists probably in the world. Mildewing in my basement. And they just dropped it. They said, space doesn't sell. Marketer said, space doesn't sell. And they gave it back to us. And about a month later, Star Wars hit the universe. And Cosmic Encounter was buried and dead.
But what they
could have been the next Monopoly. We would have been the next Monopoly if they had taken Cosmic Encounter and put it on Star Wars. Well, we wouldn't be talking to you guys right now.
You ought to send him a picture of the prototype. Take a good new picture of that prototype and send it to them.
The truth is, the fact that they failed so utterly in the vision that we had for the game
and they turned our aliens into little plastic pieces. And Parker Brothers was all about plastic. They knew how to extrude plastic.
That Dustin Hoffman, what's the old
movie? You know, they had their Nerf factory, and they could do plastic. And so plastic and a board and rules, that's what they were about. And so they turned Cosmic Encounter into that. But it took that jab at us to say, wait a minute, we can do better than that. And then we realized these aliens have to be cards. And they have to have graphics. You got to show what the alien looks like.
Well, we had graphic. No, we had physical pieces. That's what we had.
We had physical pieces that they were. We didn't. The vision that we ended up with was because Parker Brothers failed so miserably, and it made us so angry that we started designing the Cosmic that you see today.
Oh, here's inside the Parker Brothers box. I'll send you that one.
Yes, that's but,
that's ugly.
I want a fashion meal version of the game. If you guys can make an exact replica of the prototype and make it like special edition, limited to 1,000, I would totally buy it. No, I'm serious.
It had vines, and if it could reach into the egg cup, which were what the planets were, then it could get there.
Must have that old picture.
And then it had a machine that could borrow. It could. Was it the machine? Yeah, the machine. I don't know. It seemed to me that we had something else that was doing the same thing as the plant, and the machine had these wire tentacles. It was crazy. I mean, we were insane. We had
your first prototype. You used Tinker Toys, an egg carton, Nerf. Yep. This is either predates it, and like a coffee can. I think that was somebody else, and really low tech.
It was. But Parker Brothers people were fascinated because they knew, well, there was something there.
They threw Bill and I out when we went to the first. You walk in and they said, get out of here.
Well, they talked to
and
us.
So we said, wasn't that the Parker Brothers role? Okay, here's the dice story. Here's why there's no dice. We had this giant dodecahedron that you had to roll in the middle of the
homemade.
Board, homemade to see where you would go.
So I made it.
So Bill Dorman, the Parker guys. He rolls red 5 times in a row, says, this doesn't work. We forever called it the Parker Brothers roll. So we got rid of dice. That wasn't going to work. And then he basically said, see ya. And we said, we're not going to leave. We're not taking the game home. We're going to leave it here. So we leave this big, giant, you know, kind of monstrosity box of
paper mache,
foam. We said, we're going to leave it. He says, come up here. Show us. We're kind of interested. A couple of weeks later.
The staff said, we want to know more about this game. This is really different.
One other thing that's unique about the game is that there's a license to cheat. Can you explain how that works?
Yes, every alien has a special power. That's your license to cheat. Boom.
Or were you specifically referring to the Wild Filch flare?
I think we had the idea that what do you most want to do in a game? You want to break a rule. What would you most want to do in a game? Well, I'd like to break the rule that I can't see other people's cards. Ah, boom, that's an alien. It's the mine.
Yeah, let me have those. The first time we did it, it was like euphoria from the mine. Give me those cards. What?
So all these outrageous. So I told you we're rebels. We want to break rules. So we wanted to make a game about being a rebel and breaking rules.
And also players can win together. Does that mean all players win? Yeah, or there might be like two winners and like two losers?
Yeah, exactly. But that now there's our hippie. That's the hippie part. that every, you know, more than one person can win. That was us breaking the rule of that there has to be a single winner of the game.
Or there was nuclear war where everybody lost if you landed on something, and that was an older card game. So it's like
I remember
Steve nuclear Jackson. War. That's Steve Jackson's game, right?
Yeah.
Yep, Steve remember that.
Cosmic Train.
I mean, we when we actually were ready to come to market and we're going to the shows, that was the renaissance of board games. All sorts of things started to happen in board games. And it was exciting because Cosmic Encounter was the beginning of a whole genre of games. A lot of people now create games where it's different every time you play it because all the rules aren't in the rule book. They're in the rule book and they're on cards. We were the first one to kind of break up a traditional board game into that mechanics so that every game could be different. What we got was replayability. You can play that game over and over and over again, and it's always fun.
Were you guys ever under the influence when designing the game or playing Cosmic Encounter?
Only of aliens.
Okay, because I'm getting that vibe where when we asked Andy Looney...
You asked Andy Looney that same question.
And he said, oh yeah, yes I do. But he did it in a really... He said yes, but he doesn't... And I think to myself, okay, how much does drugs play a part of game design or some of these weird games like Cosmic and stuff? I don't know if you guys come from that drug background, but...
No. Not very heavily. Not heavily, no.
We were serious about the design. Yeah, you know, we'd drink wine or beer, but we were serious about design. Yeah. We had to make a living, so we all made a living however the hell we had to. But we really were passionate about our games. And we figured out how to make it happen on weekends and nights. And we never made a lot of money, but we did it because we loved doing design. Mm. I had two wives that thought I was crazy for doing it.
Well, they were right.
No, they were. It's a waste of time.
I mean, they were right, Bill. Come on. We know you're crazy. I mean, you're doing
this.
You
have to be a little crazy to get into this sort of thing. Sure.
But we did it.
Yeah. But I mean, look what's happened. You know, how many other games that survived this long and be republished by so many publishers, and just to, you know, give Fantasy Flight some credit, they've just done an absolutely fantastic job. They really took it to the next level. Just all the idea of putting the phases on the cards and, you know, restructuring the rules to sort of, you know, fill in any, there's always been a few loopholes and some, you know, unanswered questions and things like that. And then the art, just the art alone and the production value is just really fantastic. And, you know, they keep on coming up with, you know, supporting new expansion sets and, who knows where it ends.
Yeah, I think Kevin Wilson, really, Kevin at Fantasy Flight, is the chief architect of creating the Fantasy Flight look and feel, the timing strip along, you know, mm-hmm. the bottom of the aliens and the cards, which when I first saw it, I thought he'd ruined the game for life. I said, Kevin, what are you doing? It's the best thing ever done to give players at least a fighting chance.
Fantasy Flight had the vision to say, let's marry Cosmic Encounter to Game of Thrones.
That's right.
Because we want a social game that focuses on the characters and the families, and Cosmic Encounter can do that. Because when people play Cosmic, they kind of get into the role of being the alien. We've created another game, Dune, so there's shades of Dune in mm-hmm. Game of Thrones. Where you got into being the Harkonnen or the Atreides or the Bene Gesserit. And they had that vision that we could do it, that we could make a great Game of Thrones social game. It wouldn't have happened without them seeing that. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, we saw it.
Yeah. Well, plus they had the HBO license, so let's...
Right.
It was key, too.
I mean, I think that
was it hard to get permission from HBO to make this, or did they commission the game?
They have the license.
They came to us and said, "You want to do this?" Yeah. And
I think they had to get some clearance.
I think they have four or so HBO licensed products.
They had to get some clearance. Like somebody there had to approve everything, but it wasn't. It wasn't. That.
Well, the other thing is when you have all of these characters and their pictures,
mm-hmm.
you know, in a game, all of those, I think all of those probably have some sort of, you know, attachment, you know,
right.
you can, artists, you know, actors and actresses, you know, have certain rights when their stuff is used. So, but that's far beyond us. We're not into that, any of that.
I feel as though Cosmic Encounter has created almost a subculture of people that are... I know that there was Cosmic Encounter Con like a few years ago. Unfortunately, I could not go to that all the way out the Fantasy Flight Game Center. But I feel
as
though...
Yeah, we put that on. We put it on.
Yeah, we're all there.
I wish I could have gone, but I feel as though that there is also a subculture behind Cosmic Encounter and sort of the way like there was with Cosmic Wimp Out. And I feel that the board game culture we have today is pretty much just a branch out from those old school games like Dungeons and Dragons and Cosmic Encounter. Even though there has been more of a cult following of Dungeons and Dragons, I think there is a secret cult that likes Cosmic Encounter and other games like Dune, but it's very secret.
We were still the first.
Well, the thing that's very interesting to us is that that audience is growing.
Mm-hmm. Greg, it's actually on Instagram, right?
Oh, it's all over Instagram. But here's the interesting. What I one of the things I do is I try to manage all the social media angle of it, since that's my background. I've been doing it for a while now for various companies and agencies and things like that. So anyway, first thing you do is you jump into the different networks and see what's happening. See what's happening with your particular topic or product. And what one of the things I find fascinating is, let's take all the main channels where we find Cosmic popping up. Starting with Board Game Geek, old school forums, you know, heavy duty, long winded discussions, paragraph of, you know, debates and, you know, arguments and you're wrong. No, you're an idiot, blah, blah, blah. And then there's, so that's like the older crowd, probably, you know, mostly male, you know, we're going to say maybe even 40s and up, mid 30s and up, something like that. Then contrast that to Facebook is kind of, that's everybody. There's, you know, women are in there, families are in there, yeah. But it's sort of the middle ground. And then you've got Instagram, and that's decidedly younger and female, yeah, because that's just sort of who's using those networks. But it's whoever's using those networks, they're the ones who are going to start popping up their Cosmic games, you know, and they're putting their pictures online and, you know, and you know, here we are at Halloween playing Cosmic. And here
we
are.
A brand new audience of young people and a lot more women playing younger.
Yeah.
But, you know, the older set, you know, they're all heavy set guys with beards. They all look like, you know, they came
Tom Bassel and Sam Healy. Yeah,
I met my last girlfriend playing Cosmic Encounter, actually.
There you go.
Yeah.
There are those of us who are have beards and are not heavy set.
Listen, every great game design team needs a fully fledged bearded gentleman on the staff. It doesn't happen otherwise. That's Bill's got that locked. I've known my wife for 6 years now, and I finally got her to play with my sister-in-law. She comes over every Friday, and they used to watch The Bachelorette. Well, I said, well, tonight we're playing Cosmic Encounter. And what actually happened is, at the time, she was dating a guy who played Munchkin. And he goes, ooh, what's Cosmic Encounter? So I said, well, bring him over. So for a little while there, we had these great game nights where I actually got them into it. And you know, my wife and my sister-in-law, they said, hey, you know, that was actually fun. And they weren't just being polite. I think they really did.
Have you ever been approached about making a Cosmic Encounter into a film?
Oh,
we saw. I have a guy who makes movies, a friend of mine, David Taylor. And David, remember, were you there, Greg, when we were up at with Ben Dabrowski and David was there and Stuart? I don't know. So we were talking about, you know, Cosmic Encounter, the movie. But David's done a bunch of movies. He did, you know, some movies and used to write screenplays for HBO. But no, it doesn't have a real storyline, you know.
It'd be an art house film.
It would end up being like Dune, the movie, where they had to pass out a transcript before to read it. Understand what's going on.
I have thought, Peter and I are—I can't tell you what we were playtesting, but it was it was Cosmic. I thought afterwards, we played a couple of really good games, and I thought that's a story. I can just take these. Happened to be two aliens, and I could take those two aliens, and I've got a story. I should write this story.
We are at the end of the show. Is there anything else you'd like to add about your Game of Thrones series for Cosmic Encounters or any of your upcoming projects?
There's a lot of things we'd like to add, but we can't.
But we're having a lot of fun designing right now. I will say
a lot of work and a lot of interesting things, none of which are out there. And I mean, they're out there, but they're not ready for prime time.
You know, we could mention that Cosmic Dominion and Cosmic Eons will be released on TTS this year. That's okay to.
That's true.
Yeah, that's already in the can.
TTS has been a great venue for Cosmic. Yeah. I think. You know, people are playing. There was a great.
There's Twitch two games going right now. I just checked.
Yeah, so it's a lot of stuff to crank into that little tabletop simulator. But we give those guys a ton of credit for being able to you know, support this game and have it on tabletop simulator Berserk, and it's a great way to learn to play Cosmic. And we hope to be using it. We use it for all of our prototyping. For other games that we're working on.
We are at the end of the show. I would like to thank Peter Alotka, Greg Alotka, and Bill Eberle for being on. It's been an excellent show.
Well, thanks for having us on.
Right.
Thanks.
It's Here always it fun. Okay.
And also, thanks, Peter.
Thanks, guys, for being on. I'm probably going to play Cosmic this week, or the Thrones Edition, at a friend's house. He loves it, too, and it's pretty much a great way to tell all my normie friends to get into Cosmic Encounter and eventually join in the esoteric cults or something.
Exactly. That's the last, maybe we end on that note. That was, remember, one of the things that Fantasy Flight was hoping to do was to introduce Cosmic to a broader audience, because Game of Thrones is sort of a lower bar of entry, I guess you'd say. It's easier to get into because people know it. And like, hey, by the way, did you know this is really based on this other cool game we have? So we'll see what happens. send us pictures. I'll put them on, post them up on the Facebook and stuff. It's always awesome. Fun. I love getting pictures. Yeah.
Thanks for being on, guys.
All right.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Talk to you.
Bye. Bye-bye.